The following program is funded by the National Endowment for the Arts and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting through NPR's Satellite Program Development Fund. Support for the distribution of this program is provided by National Public Radio member stations and the NPR Arts and Performance Fund. Contributors include the National Endowment for the Arts, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and Bell Atlantic. The Nature of Music series is produced by Garuda Productions, which is solely responsible for its content.
From Garuda Productions, The Nature of Music.
Music is sound that makes me feel good. It could be a drop of water or whatever, but if it makes me feel good, it's music to my ears.
Music is an enormous business.
必要以上に踊らせるものじゃないでしょうか。
I think that it's partly to comfort people, and also it's something to make the heart dance.
I'm Paul Anthony. And this time on The Nature of Music, we're talking about defining music. Look up music in the New Grove Dictionary of Music and Musicians. You'll find it's not there, and you can't blame them because it's difficult to define. Throughout this series, we're trying to define music from 13 different points of view. But in this program, we ask people for a personal answer to the question, what is music? A master bell ringer tries to convince us that compositions for English change ringing are not just mathematical permutations, and that bell ringers know what's an artistic performance and what isn't. A young woman in Elko, Nevada, helps us decide for ourselves who should be the winner at a Basque yelling contest. And the Kaluli people of Papua New Guinea show us how their music is inseparable from the birds and waterfalls and other sounds of their home in the rainforest.
It's very easy for the Oxford English Dictionary to say music is a collection of beautiful sounds, viz. Beethoven symphony or something. But that's not enough when you actually discover that there are people that are going through other exercises that they call music. And so we have to keep revising the definition, that's all.
Here's an exercise some people call music. Bells high in a church tower ringing out. This is English change ringing, composed according to strict rules of mathematical permutations. Is it music or is it mathematics? Bell ringers like to have it both ways. They call it
the art and science of change ringing. Two things. Music itself is defined in terms of art and or science.
Richard Dirksen is bellmaster at the Washington Cathedral in the nation's capital. He says that in English change ringing, bell ringers must never play the same pattern twice in the same piece. A pattern or change is simply the order in which they ring each bell. They have their methods of changing, of permutating, really, the order of the bells to avoid the fatal error of repetition.
Handbells can be rung to changes, and they're very good for demonstration purposes because they can be struck very precisely. You don't have a 30-foot rope attached to them. If you listen to this selection here, what you'll be hearing is six bells striking first rounds, just down the scale, and then the first change, as it were, 1, 3, 2, 4, 5, 6. A very simple method of change ringing is what we know as a plain hunt.
First change.
Now, we're going to play them for you up to tempo.
There are not many musics in the world where you compose with strictly mathematical formulas, except maybe 12-tone music. If change ringing is both an art and a science, what are the aesthetics? How do you know what's a great performance or what's a mediocre one?
The ideal is to have the striking of the bells metrically perfect. Would be an ideal. For ringers. You can achieve that on handbells fairly easily. On tower bells, it's a function of a couple of things. It's a function of the skill of the individual ringers. If you have a weak band, it'll come out sounding sort of... which is a long way from what your objective is. The problem there, of course, is that the inexperienced ringer has a great deal of trouble controlling the weight of the individual bell and making it strike precisely on time. It's very hard to do with a 30 feet of rope over your head and a 600-pound bell attached to it. So the experience of the band is one major criteria. Even with a good band, then, you have, for your better ringers, they become much more discriminating. To them, ringing that is acceptable to a poor band is unacceptable. They would walk away from it and stop the peal altogether and say, this is unacceptable, and not ring it.
Whether English change ringing is music or mathematics is an easy question compared to defining music in cultures outside our own.
We have a certain image, a certain concept of what music is in our Western history. Apparently, a lot of cultures don't have a word for music in their language. And maybe we have to recognize, to acknowledge the fact that our search for the fact of music in another culture is a question asked by Western ethnomusicologists.
Jean-Jacques Nantier of the University of Montreal is one of those Western ethnomusicologists.
We developed through our ethnomusicology and musicology a series of concepts related with what is music for us. There is no way to go out of this fact. I cannot go out of my own culture at the minute I am using scientific concepts. It's totally impossible. What I can do is to recognize what I consider as music is not considered as music by the other people.
Another researcher, Stephen Feld, went to Papua New Guinea and learned a lesson about what music is from the Kaluli people there. He says that experience changed his way of thinking about music.
The Kaluli don't have to worry about music because small-scale societies tend not to invent a single term which is translatable by what we call music. The most forceful way it hit me was that I always wanted to talk to them about songs, and they always wanted to talk to me about birds. I always wanted to, you know, listen to the playbacks of the songs. I always wanted to shoo people away so that there wasn't a lot of additional noise and stuff like that around the recording. And they always wanted more waterfalls on the recording. They always wanted more insects. They always wanted more trees falling down in the background. Because their way of dealing with the sound continuum is so radically different from mine. And their whole sense of signal and noise was radically different from mine.
Yeah.
So the first recordings I made, of course, from a Kaluli point of view, were abysmal. From my point of view, in fact, the only ones that were really, you know, sort of clean recordings without a whole lot of bunch of babies crying in the background and that sort of stuff were the ones that I made in the beginning when I was doing things in a completely stupid and ethnocentric way. But the longer I stayed there, the more my recordings were filled up with this kind of co-presence of birds and insects and waterfalls and people working and people singing. And the sound became much more contextualized in the sort of right way. It's not just that the birds and the insects and the water are inspiring the Kaluli. It's not just that they're putting these things in the song text. It's not just that they're listening to these sounds and saying this is what inspires us when we compose. It's that they want to sing with them. And it's because they think of themselves as part of the same thing. They don't think of themselves as distinct from it.
Anthropologist Stephen Feld and the songs and sounds of the Kaluli people of Papua New Guinea. Again, here's ethnomusicologist Jean-Jacques Nautier.
Even in our culture, the limit between music and noise is something which is changing culturally and so also modified or varying from one person to another. And if it is this case in our culture, we may suspect or expect that in other cultures, the boundaries between music and no music are going also to be different.
Earlier, Stephen Feld said that small-scale societies often have no word that corresponds to our word, music, that they think of the sounds we humans produce as being an integral part of all sounds in the natural world. Nautier found a similar concept among the Inuit Eskimos of Canada.
Once again, we face to a situation where there is no word for music in Eskimo culture. They have a word, the word nipi, which could mean noise, except that this word nipi can be applied as well to the sound of an airplane or to the sound of a drum dance song.
I think this problem of definition is one we can't solve.
It is an intellectual art, which can be manifested through performance.
It's excitement, a kind of spiritual high. That's all.
On this program, the question is, what is music? We'll hear some answers from composer John Cage and violinist Yehudi Menuhin. And for a change of pace, we'll visit a Basque festival to judge a contest where the performers may be making music. Or are they? Since the definition of music changes from culture to culture and even from person to person, how do we know what is music and what isn't? Musicologist Józef Pacholczyk grew up in Poland.
Depends on what criteria are we accepting. And we have accepted historically all kinds of criteria. I was brought up very early into differentiating between two kinds of music, the good music and bad music. And the good music was Beethoven, Chopin, and the bad music was nearly everything else.
I'm calling up TWA and they hang me up, you know, put me on hold and force music down my ears, so to speak. And I for me, basically that's noise. I call it music only because it has differential pitches, but it is a weed, so to speak, as far as I'm concerned, because if they're going to hold me up for 5 minutes, I want to be able to work during that 5 minutes and not listen to their lousy music.
Leonard Meyer is a music historian.
But a weed?
Well, what is a weed to you is something you want to pull up and throw away, right? And what is a plant is something you want to cultivate. And I would say that what is music is what a culture decides it wants to cultivate, what the people in that culture are willing to pay for. And if the people in our culture are willing to go and pay to hear John Cage line up 12 refrigerators and have a counterpoint between General Electric and Westinghouse, then that's music.
But my impression here in Washington is that one hears the planes a great deal. I heard them last night in the concert. And I turned to my neighbor and said, "Didn't you think those planes were beautiful?" She said she was trying to concentrate on the music and she hadn't enjoyed them at all. So she was actually not enjoying the music in the way that I was enjoying it. But that's perfectly all right. Each one of us, has his own experience.
Composer John Cage. He says where you place your attention determines what is music.
For instance, if you had a bowl of spaghetti and you ate it, it would be proper to consider it as food. But if instead of eating it, you put it on top of your head, it would be more apt to be thought of as a costume. Or even as an incident in a Dada theatrical piece. So this whole idea of the changing nature of something comes to us from the 20th century, from the philosophy of Wittgenstein. And he says the meaning of something is in its use.
At the minute you ask the question, what is music, you are using an English word. A word. Maybe we should go back to the problem of understanding what is a concept, what is the meaning of a word in our language. The meaning of a word is a situation in which a word is used. It's why the boundaries of the concept of music are changing from person to person, from social groups to social groups, and from cultures to cultures.
Music is sounds you like to listen to.
It essentially is a domain in which matter and spirit unite.
It's one of the ways of affirming life. When you're dead, you won't hear anything. As far as we know.
High in the mountains, it can be heard for miles. The ancient Basque war cry, the Irinsi. Is it music? At the National Basque Festival in Elko, Nevada, the best Irinsi is chosen. Almost any Basque person can tell you which one sounds the best and how to judge a good one.
Very forceful and very even. Very even, yeah. And it goes on very, very long. And it ends up with the ay-ya-ya-ya-ya-ya. Just a long, it just kind of wavers out. It just kind of fades. And that's the good it didn't see.
There's no doubt among audience or judges who wins first place. The first contestant, Ardina Barranca from Ely, Nevada.
I think music is essentially whatever the composer says is music. It may not be anything you want to listen to.
A recording in sound of the motions of the spirit. Not emotions, but motions, the movements of spirit inside one.
If you ask someone that question, they can give you a lot of answers, but they don't really know, and they can't give you the answer.
I hate definitions.
But that's what we're looking for on this edition of The Nature of Music. Definitions of what music is. And French ethnomusicologist Gilbert Rouget thinks that music can be defined as a spiritual bond between humans.
J'aurais tendance à penser que
I would tend to think
la musique,
that
elle est,
music
d'abord que c'est une activité supérieure
is qui a superior activity. It's a higher level activity. And the person who makes music must have a total unity of all his functions, intellectual functions, motor functions.
Et à part cela, je pense que la musique est
furthermore, I think that music is an irreplaceable way, a unique way, not to communicate with others, but to commune with others. I think that communication is done through language, communion is done through music.
Violinist Yehudi Menuhin defines music in terms of movements and vibrations in response to the universe. But isn't music a form of communication?
Yes, and not only with our fellow human beings, but as everything is vibration, light and sound and the farthest star impinges on the earth with its light, its vibrations, that the music puts us, as it were, in contact with all the vibrations of the universe. It's the art of time and vibrations.
Music because it means something to us, something very important and fundamental. It tells us things about ourselves that we have no other way of knowing. Yeah, I'm serious. Dreams tell us things about ourselves that cannot be told any other way. Music does that. Drama does that. Painting does that. Music does that. We need to know those things. Thank you.
If you'd like a free program guide to the Nature of Music series, or information on how to order a cassette or a transcript of this program on defining music, write to The Nature of Music, National Public Radio, Washington, D.C., 20036. Here's that address again. The Nature of Music, National Public Radio, Washington, D.C., 20036. Don't forget to mention the call letters of the station you are listening to and the title of this program, Defining Music. Our program on Defining Music is written and produced for Garuda Productions by Carl Signell and Deborah Jane Lamberton. John Widoff is the mix engineer. Michael Wilpers is the research assistant. The executive producer for the series is Dr. Carl Signell. The Nature of Music series is funded by the National Endowment for the Arts and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting through NPR's Satellite Program Development Fund. I'm Paul Anthony. This is NPR, National Public Radio.